If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah, all right. That is just the way to start the show. It really is. I wish every radio host had the pleasure of having an intro song that could just sock the listeners, punch them right straight in the face with some attention getter, like mine does. I dig it. Okay. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. I am broadcasting again from Los Angeles. Now, I was supposed to do a few interviews here while I'm in town doing a few things. Unfortunately, schedules got a little bit mixed up, both mine and a couple people who are interviewees. Therefore, I'm going to go through a few things now, and I'm going to play for you a few different segments that I've done in the last probably couple of months that have garnished the most email interest. So we're going to hit a couple of those things, get you reminded up on a few things, and keep some good, solid, pro-rights, pro-gun ideals in the minds of every one of the listeners. That's you. So I also want to bring up right now, keep in mind, Illinois is one of two states that has no provision for concealed carry, and they don't like listening to anybody about concealed carry at the state level. So because of that, the Illinois State Rifle Association is holding its annual Illinois Gun Owners Lobby Day at the state capitol on March 10th. That's in about 3.5 weeks or so. Now, last year they had over 5,000 people, gun owners, for Gun Owner Lobby Day in Illinois at the state capitol. This year, we want to double it. We want 10,000 people or more in Illinois to show up on the 10th of March to the Illinois Gun Owners Lobby Day. So, please, if you're in Illinois, look up the Illinois State Rifle Association. Get together with your other gun-owning, gun-toting, pro-Second Amendment friends and go to the state capitol and let them know you're sick and tired of all the garbage legislation. Now they're trying to make it to where even if you live in Oak Park or Chicago, where handguns are banned in those cities, they're trying to pass some sort of a completely counterproductive and unconstitutional law that would say you can't even buy one if you live in Chicago or Oak Park. As of now, some people are owning those guns, but keeping them stored outside of the city limits, now they're going to say you can't even purchase one. So your rights completely restricted. So, check out the Illinois State Rifle Association if you're in Illinois or even around there in the vicinity. Maybe if you're from Wisconsin or I don't know, Indiana, check it out. Stay tuned, guys. We have some good stuff coming for you. I gotta tell you, traffic here in LA is a little bit goofy, but I'm making my way through. Anyhow, I'm gonna play some of these best of segments for you for the rest of the day, so just stay tuned and be sure to email me, bill@2aradio.com.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
At home, I do some hand-loading of ammunition. I don't really want to say reloading so much, because generally I'm using brand-new components. And one of the rifles that I hand-load for is the 416 Remington Magnum. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, 416 Remington Magnum is one of those African cartridges for the Big Five. On North America, you could hunt any of the following. You could hunt large elk or moose, buffalo or bear, especially something large like the Kodiak bear, which is the largest bear in the world. So the 416 Remington Magnum, I got this gun with the scope on it. It's a Remington 700 action. It's got a Swarovski 1.5-4 power scope on it. It is the scope that African hunters for Big Five want. It is the exact scope that they strive for. I got this whole package. I got it on a deal from a friend of mine who used to come out and train with me. And then after I got the gun, I realized that the rounds are between $5 and $8 a piece. This is a couple years ago when I got the gun. Now the rounds are upwards of about $10 to $12 a piece. The reason being that ammunition manufacturers are concentrating on the very popular, more defense-type rounds right now when it comes to manufacturing. They're not getting into a lot of the wildcat things such as that. They're doing some hunting rounds. They're doing a lot of defense rounds. But they're not getting into more of the specialty rounds. 416 Remington Magnum is one of them. It's a difficult round to find when you can. So a lot of people hand load it, which is what I do. And as it turns out, I ended up with way more brand new empty shell casings than I could use. When I'm said and done, when I've got all of the ammunition loaded for this gun, I'm going to have somewhere around 300 rounds for it. I've yet to even fire a round out of the gun itself, because I haven't had a reason to. But I am keeping some rounds to the side to do some sight-in on the thing and get a feel for it. But I ended up with a whole bunch. I was doing inventory on a bunch of my casings and such over the weekend, and I found that I had about an extra couple hundred casings for this 416 Remington Magnum. So I ended up putting them up on GunBroker, see if they can go from there. There's a few different people that sell 416-related items on there. A lot of them are 416 Rigby. There's even something from a 416 Taylor good round. But the Remington Magnum, 416 Rem Mag, that's actually what it was. Is a 375 H&H Magnum necked up to accept a 416 caliber bullet. From 300 to 400 grains. Most of them are 350 to 400. So if anybody happens to load that round and you're interested in any of those casings, I've got some listed. I think the auction numbers, it's just ones and threes. It's like 1333131113 or something like that. And if you have any interest in knowing a little bit about that particular round and why I chose 416 Remington Magnum, you can shoot me off an email, and I will cite my sources on it. Just all-around good, solid caliber. It doesn't have quite the kick of, say, like your 458 lot or some of your Weatherby rounds, but it's certainly bigger than the 375 H&H, which a number of professional hunters have said is, even though it's technically and legally the bare minimum to shoot the Big Five in Africa, it's really not up to the task, so carry something bigger. A lot of research that I have done has sent me over to the 416 Remington Magnum, and I was just lucky to find my friend Ken actually available to, he was getting out of the gun. I wanted to get into it, so there we go. Someday I'll actually go out and shoot the thing after I've loaded a couple hundred rounds for it. It's been kind of a backwards process. I want to cite a reference book that's out there and available used on Amazon.com. This is the book that really got me understanding all about the rifle. And it's called The Book of the Rifle. It's written by a guy by the name of Jim Carmichael. Jim Carmichael spent decades, I'm not even sure, he may still be there, as the shooting editor for Outdoor Life magazine. Jim's written a lot. He's certainly edited a lot. And he wrote the book called The Book of the Rifle back in the late 80s or early 90s. It's been out of print for some time. But it is a fantastic read, and it is, if you're a rifleman, or you want to be a rifleman, or you want to be a better rifleman, it is the Bible that you must not go without. A good friend of mine in Las Vegas, who retired after 33 years on Las Vegas Metro, a guy by the name of Steve Franks, Steve told me about this book years ago, and he lent me his copy out of his own library. And I took the next 2 or 3 weeks to read this book in my spare time. I was so impressed with this book, about halfway through, I went onto Amazon, I found it, and I ordered it. And I ordered a copy that was in pristine condition and had been autographed by Jim Carmichael himself. Now, Steve's book had been gone through. Several people had read it. It had a bit of wear. It wasn't in bad shape by any means. It had just had a bit of wear. When I got this new book in, the one that I ordered off of Amazon, the one that had been signed by Jim Carmichael, I was impressed by the condition of this book. It was in wonderful condition. So rather than give Steve his book back and then me hold on to this nice pristine one that had been autographed by Jim Carmichael, I gave Steve the nicer autographed book. And as thank you for having turned me on to such a wonderful and fantastic reference, this book talks about everything. We're talking about materials used in guns. We're talking about different stocks, stock materials, stock designs. There is talk about progressive rifling, barrel lengths, burn rates within these different lengths of barrel. There's an entire chapter on African rifles. There's an entire chapter on North American game rifles. There's a chapter on going prairie dog and shooting it at varmints with varmint rifles. It's just absolutely amazing, full of information. Jim Carmichael, in his own right, is an educated guy. He knows a lot about engineering and physics, so he is an authority to be able to write on these subjects. And he does get a little technical on some of the things, but as soon as he does, he then breaks it down so anybody can understand it if you don't quite have the engineering or physics or technical background into such a thing, so even when it comes to machining or woodworking. A lot of history involved, and a lot of different tests that had gone on to either solidify a theory or to blow the holes into a theory, such as progressive rifling, as an example. Talks about the smooth bore of the old muskets when they first went to a single ball going through these guns. It's just a wonderful, wonderful book. Very interesting to read. And when you're done with it, it becomes a reference manual for certain things. Once you're done with the whole deal, you want to go back and look up things for varmint rifles or for going through the looking for a gun for African plains or even the Big Five. Another excellent reference. Pull it off the shelf. Reread that chapter. It is fantastic. He shares a lot of personal stories in there. If you can go to Amazon.com and look it up, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael, starts with a C. And I'm sure you'll enjoy that. He actually, Jim Carmichael, got together with another fella, and I don't recall his name. They developed a wildcat round called the 22 Cheetah, C-H-E-E-T-A-H. And the C and the H are both capital, because the other guy that Jim Carmichael worked with, his last name started with H, so that it's capitalized to homage the two of them. The 22 Cheetah is a 22 caliber round that would fire in, like, say, Remington 700, some sort of varmint rifle, 22 caliber varmint rifle, that with a 1 in 16 inch twist achieved something like 4,600 feet per second muzzle velocity, which is unbelievably fast. I mean, just unreal. Very, very impressive. And accurate as the day is long. Just very interesting stuff. I ended up buying a Remington 700 E-Tronix rifle in 22-250. And I figured if I ever shoot the throat out of that thing, I will probably have the barrel rechambered to 22 Cheetah and have an electronic firing 22 Cheetah just to be different. I have no problem in having the occasional unique gun here and there. That's okay with me. It's more the defensive hardware that I'm not willing to experiment with very far. I don't want to go so far outside of the box that if I need to grab another rifle for parts or repair, I'm not out of luck. because there's nothing out there. So anyhow, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael. If you're interested in bench rest shooting, by the way, he's got a wonderful story in there about an incredibly windy day in Tucson, Arizona, back in the 80s, when he pulled out a 220 Swift, and just a stock 220 Swift, which is not generally looked at as a bench rest gun or bench rest caliber. However, Jim knew that it was not affected nearly as much by the wind on this incredibly windy day as most of the other rounds out there. Now, Jim didn't win. He did come in second that day, and it goes through the entire story. And the interesting thing is, whoever won has probably been long forgotten, but that Jim Carmichael came in second with a pretty well stock 220 Swift. That's what people remember, a non-standard caliber that he brought out on a windy day, because that caliber is inherently affected far less by the wind than many of the other rounds that are out there in bench rest competitions today. A little bit more coming for you in the next segment when we return, so stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. And welcome back from the break. 30 years ago, the Second Amendment was practically dead in the United States. Gun control was sweeping the nation. The courts accepted a vapid and fraudulent interpretation of an otherwise insignificant case as the primary legal precedent dealing with the Second Amendment. The rights of the law-abiding hit the ebb tide by the mid-70s. And then a grassroots movement germinated and took hold. The grassroots? Americans who've always regarded guns as tools rather than social statements. And they started fighting back. And starting in the early 1980s, they started turning the tide. One vote, one town, one legislature at a time. Shall issue concealed carry laws, which put the burden on the state to prove that the citizen should not have the ability to bear arms, were used throughout the country. In 1983, there were all of 8 states with these laws. But the movement, a force of a work-a-daddy, a hug-a-mommy citizens, who squeezed activism into their spare time between work and family, started organizing movements, city by city and state by state, to change the laws. And now, 26 years later, 39 states are either shall issue or have no restriction on the law-abiding whatsoever. Another 9 states have a may issue system, and only 2 states, in the name of Wisconsin and Illinois, which has had, they have been such peaceful places, still pay unthinking, just fetally ideals that a disarmed and passive citizenry is the best. And this victory was won, one voter, one street, one bill at a time, from the grassroots, from the bottom up. There is a new bill by Representative Elmer, actually borrowed from similar bills that have become law in Montana, Tennessee, and South Carolina, and is part of a national grassroots effort to start that same dynamic for the second least appreciated amendment in the Constitution, and that is the 10th Amendment. The 10th Amendment has fallen on hard times since the 1930s. The Fed, operating under the cover of several key court cases, has been able to insulate federal power into a range of places and subjects that would have made the founding fathers vomit. for the benefit of the Obama supporters that might be listening, the 10th Amendment reads this. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Where the people mean exactly what Heller says it means, you and I. The overreaching of the Obama regime casts its effect into a stark reef. It underscores the urgency of the mission. The 10th Amendment is supposed to, it's supposed to help protect the people from gross overreach by the federal government, which they've been doing more and more so since the 1930s. The implications of a weak 10th Amendment are obvious. The government can claim almost anything is interstate commerce as a pretext for regulation. The benefits of a strong 10th Amendment, the implications, everything, it's just everything from taxation to Roe versus Wade. And I think the Firearms Freedom Act being introduced in other states, as Emmers is being introduced in Minnesota, are a great way to marry the power, passion, and grassroots savvy of the most freedom-loving people in America with the need to push federal government back out of a huge swath of American life and do it to the Interstate Commerce Act, what the Right to Keep and Bear Arms movement has done to gun control. If you live in Minnesota or any of the other states where the Firearms Freedom Act is under consideration, get on your phone and call your legislator and let them know that the same groundswell of people that made gun control a third rail in American politics over the past several decades of trench fighting is still out there and looking for more notches on its belt. If you live elsewhere, your mission is clear. Let your legislators know that the 10th Amendment isn't chicken feed through overregulation and overtaxation. The federal government is unregulated in passing unconstitutional laws. Many of those laws are unconstitutional in the eyes of the 10th Amendment. Many states, once the Obama regime took control, sent letters invoking their 10th Amendment powers against the over-oppression of federal laws. You're listening to the best of Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. So when you think about European countries and you think about gun laws, you usually think, yeah, that's rough. A lot of European countries are very, very strict on guns. Some of them just say, no, you can't have them. And most of them, though, you can have a gun, but they're so incredibly restricted and highly regulated. And any time something happens, any crime is committed with the gun, they restrict these gun laws more and more. Now, in Israel, they did the opposite. When they were having the schools were being attacked, what they ended up doing was they made a very unpopular decision at the time to arm everybody who worked at the school. All the teachers, the janitors, the support staff have armed guards there, military there, and arm all of them and teach them how to shoot. Well, they haven't had any attacks at any school since they implemented this back in the 70s. So they went the opposite way. Now, the one exception in Europe is Switzerland. Switzerland is a neutral country. Switzerland is also known for having excellent rifles. Because every able-bodied male in the entire country, once they get to be 18 years old, I think is the age, 17, 18, 19, whatever it is, they have to go in for mandatory basic military training service. Then they take their rifles home with them, and they still go out and they practice, and they go to different practices and organizations throughout their life. Even when they're released from military duty, which is usually when they're about 40 years old, they're no longer mandated to have to participate, but if they're called up on, they still can. They get to keep that rifle. So essentially, when you're given the rifle, it's going to be yours for life. So here's just a little bit I want you to listen to. It's about 3 minutes. On Switzerland, guns, and how things go in that country. Listen up.
This is a SIG 550. It's designed to destroy anything standing within its 400-meter trajectory. And there are over 500,000 of them kept in Swiss homes. Guns and shooting are a strong Swiss tradition. Basic military training is mandatory for young men. And afterwards, they're required to keep their weapon at home. Mark Heim is the Ticino representative for the lobby group ProTel.
Basically, this was my father's military rifle. And, of course, he got to keep it when he was finished. I have my grandfather's rifle in the office hanging on the wall. This was mine when I did service, which is quite an old one. It was introduced in 1957. Was used until 1990. And this is my son's. That's the current model. That's what's being used today. That's what we'll be using to shoot the Feldschießen today.
The Feldschießen, or Tiro Federale in Campania, as it's known in these parts, is an annual Swiss event, and it's also the largest shooting festival in the world. Roughly 200,000 people come out to target practice all across the country. Ammunition is provided by the government. Heim goes regularly to this range, and it's often a family affair.
It was organized by the government to have a very high state of readiness for the Swiss military and population. The target has always been that within 24 to 48 hours, Switzerland could mobilize a pretty large army, I mean, even by European standards.
But it wasn't the militia that sparked Heim's interest in guns as a young man. It was an unassuming trip to a Holocaust museum.
I was going through all the exhibits and the soap and the lampshades made of people's skin. And while I was looking, I heard a funny noise. And there was an old woman, maybe 2 meters from me. And she was trying not to cry. She was sort of sobbing very quietly. She was holding it back. If she had been a few meters further away, I wouldn't have heard her. And she obviously had gone through that. That's when the whole impact of it hit me. And I promised myself I would never be in her situation. I would want to be free, never in a situation where somebody could, you know, march us off to ovens or prisons or just take away our freedom. The key to freedom is the ability to be able to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you are at the mercy of whoever wants to put you away. And the tools for that are guns.
Imagine that. You're talking about a free nation which is neutral. And the keys to keeping free and not being at the mercy of any dictator, anybody that wants it to come take control, is the citizens have guns. And in this case, they know how to use them. Not only do they know how to use them, but their national government sponsors annual shooting events and gives out the ammunition for them. Why? Well, the median family income in Switzerland is about $67,000. All right? Now, the Swiss form of government came in, the Swiss federal constitution that they have was in, I think, 1820-something, 1824. But they've actually existed in the similar form that they do now since the 13th century, since 1291. Okay? So that country's been around a while. They've had very independent thoughts. They've had generations of people saying, look, we're happy right here. We don't need a bunch of people getting in our business. We don't need to get in a bunch of other people's business. We're neutral, which is the way the United States was prior to World War I. We tried to be neutral. You know, trade with other countries and everything was fine. Sure, yeah, come vacation, do whatever you want to do. But when it comes down to it, this is our country. We're going to run it our way. We're going to make our own rules. And the population here is all of the same mindset. We've instilled that through hundreds of years. The education system is that way. The family system is that way. You know, that's just the way things are. And the way we ensure that and encourage it is to have the entire population able to come to active duty and actually defend this country. The Swiss don't get slapped around. They just don't. Could you imagine in this country if we had something similar? Yes, you know, let's resurrect the militia. Not only are we going to resurrect the militia, we're going to give you guns. If you want to sign up, you know, we're going to make sure you're not a criminal or a turd. And, you know, we're going to give you the guns. And we're going to have annual or semi-annual shooting events. We'll give you the ammunition for that. Keep these guns at home. If something goes down and you're called upon, we're going to expect you to be there. This is going to be your area of expertise. We'll give you training on that. Well, that would be pretty cool. I just have to say, that would be pretty cool. Now, people are of such a lazy, I guess just a lazy disposition and an entitlement disposition that I doubt you'd get anything like that in this country. It's like, well, what do I get out of it? What's in it for me? You know, when am I going to get mine? Well, have you done anything for yours yet? We say freedom isn't free. We say freedom is expensive. Freedom is costly. It's been expensive. It's been costly. But hardly anybody of this day and age is willing to get off their ass and lift a finger to do anything about preserving freedom in their life or during their entire lifetime. That's why I so applaud the people who are in the United States military right now. Because everybody who's in the military right now either signed up post 9/11 in wartime or, if nothing else, re-signed up. They were already in, and they have decided to re-enlist. So it's an all-volunteer military where everybody has volunteered or elected to continue on in their military career during wartime. Now, those are the exceptions to the rules. I want to talk a little bit about gun enhancement crimes. Here's the idea of a gun enhancement crime. If you commit a crime with a gun, you will, in a lot of states that have these, a lot of different, I'll call them jurisdictions, because it might be a state, it might be a county, where if you commit a crime and you've got a gun, the enhancement, the crime is doubled. The penalty is doubled if convicted. Okay? So let's say you rob a bank with nothing more than a note to a bank teller. And let's say that that carries a 5-year penalty. If you rob a bank with a gun and there's the enhancement crime, you would be serving a 10-year penalty. I'm all for that. However, there are some gun enhancement laws regulations, whatever you want to call them, on the books around the country, which are not quite as specific. Mere possession of a gun while committing a crime can get you double the sentence. Let me give you an idea of this, and this is on the lower end, right? Let's say you're trespassing. Let's say that there is an abandoned factory, and you're trespassing for whatever reason. Maybe you're out scavenger hunting, right? You're looking around this old factory. Maybe you're looking for some, copper tubing to take to the recycling center and make a couple bucks. And it's crappier. Let's say maybe you're in Detroit, all right, and you're going through an old Chrysler building, who knows what. And you're trespassing, they stop you. Okay, well, trespassing is a crime. If they happen to have an enhancement of possession of a firearm, then whatever that punishment is for trespassing, and let's say it's a $100 fine, would now be a $200 fine. Or maybe it would go from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor, or maybe a felony. The way that those sorts of things are written are absolutely unconstitutional. Absolutely. Because let me give you another example. Let's say that someone is found to be trespassing on the same piece of property. And when they're found by whoever the law enforcement is or whoever's looking around and finds this person trespassing, and while they find him, they happen to be on their knees praying, exercising their First Amendment right to freedom of religion. They're trespassing where they shouldn't be, and they're found praying. Is there an enhancement crime for trespassing while exercising a constitutional right? No. Now, let's say that you're carrying a gun. Legal to carry a gun. You happen to be trespassing. You shouldn't be trespassing. But because you have a gun, now the gun wasn't used in the trespassing crime, but because you have a gun, now all of a sudden, this crime is enhanced. Because you were exercising a constitutional right to possess a gun. You see the difference between mere possession of a firearm when committing some sort of crime that you may or may not be aware of, and the difference of committing a felony and using a gun in the commission of this crime? Let's say somebody walks into a convenience store and they are, we'll go back to the bank. They rob the bank. Okay, we know that's against the law. And they have a gun on them, but they don't use the gun. In a lot of cases, in a lot of jurisdictions, the way that these laws or regulations are written, they will do double the time. Now, I'm not a fan of bank robbers. The point being, if they didn't actually use the gun, maybe once they leave, they've got the little battery pack or the ink dye pack, they find the guy, they've got a gun. Did you have this gun when you walked into the bank? Yeah, it was under my jacket. Okay, well, you're just going to get double. Well, mere possession of a gun is different than the use of a gun. That'd be the same as going into the bank and robbing the bank, and when you're done saying to the teller, praise the Lord, praise Jesus. Well, now you're exercising your First Amendment right, freedom of religion, and you're sharing it with them. Is there an enhancement crime for that? No, there's not. Here's my point, guys. Mere possession of a firearm, and you end up breaking a law that you may not be aware of. It might be something as simple as trespassing. Now, if you're breaking a law and you know you're breaking a law, you walk in and you write a note to a teller and say, give me the money, you know that's against the law. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about inadvertently breaking a law or an infraction of some kind. You may be completely unaware of this, or you do it and it was totally unintentional. It went down. You happen to have a gun on you. The gun was not used at any point in the breaking of this law or the infraction. And some prosecutor wants to give you an enhancement for possession of a gun. You need to find yourself one really good kick-ass gun crime attorney. And you need to attack this on a constitutional level. Say, look, if I was exercising my right to freedom of speech or freedom of religion, or I was a member of a press and writing a story at the time or collecting information, would there be an added sentence to this? Would it be doubled? No, of course not. It's exercising my right to keep and bear arms. It wasn't used in this. I was completely unaware it was unintentional. But yet you want to enhance some penalty because I was exercising my constitutional right. The reason I bring this up, guys, is this sort of thing has been going on around the country with more and more regularity, especially in the anti-gun regions of the country. Okay? Illinois, California, New Jersey, some areas of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Some of these areas, people are getting hit with enhancement crimes for unintended infractions or breaking of the law for merely possessing a firearm that was not used in the commission of this crime. Fight these. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. Look, I just want to remind everyone that at RBN, we're having a pledge drive. And really, what we're doing, we're in the process of standing up another network, let me get untongue-tied there, and that network is going to be the Elected Representatives Network, the ERN, where we're going to put on elected representatives from all across the country that are going to have regular shows, probably going to have some special shows here and there as things work out. So we're in the process of standing up that network. One of the reasons we're having the pledge drives to get that up there and get that out is some alternative programming to what we already have here on Republic Broadcasting. So if you'd like to donate to that, please, to the pledge drive, you can donate by calling 800-724-2719. Again, that's 800-724-2719. That's 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, all right, because we have the network is in Round Rock, Texas. You could also go online to republicbroadcasting.org and donate there. As well, you could also send in a pledge if you like. And that address is, let me pull it up here. It is 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. Again, 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. That's in Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Again, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. So we appreciate that when it comes to anything that you would be able to donate when it comes to the pledge drive. I actually designed some bumper stickers that I sent in, and hopefully, provided the network looks at it and say, okay, that's not too far out to the right. That's not so far out there. We'll be able to use those and maybe sell those as part of a pledge drive. Additionally, guys, you can get the 100 business cards, which are generic, as in they don't have a name, but they're good-looking cards. They're kind of a gloss finish. 100 business cards, plus you get an RBN bumper sticker and a copy of Aaron Russo's America, Freedom to Fascism for $8, and that includes shipping. So you get 100 cards, a bumper sticker, and a copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism for $8. So remember that. Remember the pledge drive, if you would please. And if you happen to feel like sending me any emails, you can go onto the website. The website is www.2aradio.com. That's not two-way radio. That is 2A, as in Second Amendment Radio.com. And my email address is real simple, guys. It's bill@2aradio.com. All right? So feel free to send me any sort of emails you like, comments on the show, anything that's going on. Please keep the forwards to yourself. Address it personally. I'm happy to read it, and if it's a question I can answer on the show, I will. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Lendman News Hour coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.